This is the Hear Hear podcast. Today we are joined by Tony Vasile, program manager at Adaptive Sports Foundation. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, first point of clarification: when we were looking back at your profile, should we actually be referring to you as Dr. Tony Vasile?
It depends on the context, I guess, but no, not here.
So, but we could still slip a doc in there.
Yeah.
What do you say, doc?
Yeah.
I feel like with credentials like that, I mean, there has to be at least some occasions where, I mean, what do you say, doc?
Yeah, in an interview where I'm trying to sound serious or get something, or if, basically it's in emails that I'm like,
yeah.
Dr. Vasile, yeah, thank you, yeah. But not in everyday life.
Well, this is a very serious podcast, so yeah, from right. Now on, it'll be Dr. Tony Vasile.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, at the beginning of every question from here on in.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Let's start out with, because of the world that you're in right now, kind of some of your background, some of your hobbies, your outdoor life, that maybe... what led you to the doctorate that you pursued,
mm-hmm.
and what kind of, you know, brought you into the adaptive world?
So I grew up in Western New York to start off, super rural, like super small area, and just interacted, I guess, with a lot of like unhealthy people doing unhealthy things. So I was always good at like math and science and stuff like that. So I got kind of into medicine. And when I was kind of exploring that stuff in high school and like medical programs and things, physical therapy kind of jumped out at me as like a blend of all the things that I like, which is, you know, the science and the medicine and all that, but also doing fun things and,
yeah.
and moving your body. So I pursued that, you know, in, before we started, you know, recording earlier, I was talking about graduating during the pandemic. And so, you know, it took 7 years, but I got my, my doctorate in physical therapy, in 2020. I did my last clinical in the, trauma ICU at Upstate Medical University, during the pandemic. So it was definitely an interesting time to like work in the hospital and to be in that. But while I was in PT school, I started volunteering with this program called Arise and Ski, which is out. It used to be at Toggenburg Mountain. I think it's at Labrador Mountain now. So
where is that? Where's Toggenburg?
That's like half an hour south of Syracuse in like the Fabius Tully kind of area.
Okay.
So shout out Arise and Ski. I got started with them teaching adaptive snowboarding and really fell in love with doing that. And so while I was in PT school, my final year, I designed a research project and was basically trying to describe the benefits that I was seeing. And so I published this paper called The Psychosocial Benefits of Adaptive Snow Sports. For people with disabilities, and just did kind of like a small case study on a few of the people that were in the program, and you know, it was just describing all these amazing things that I was seeing, you know, behaviors improving and like time in the principal's office reducing, time to get ready in the morning to go to school was reducing, you know, all these behavioral things for folks with more cognitive disabilities were improving when they had this like structured ski program that they were participating in. You know, there's obviously physical improvements and stuff like that from doing, you know, the same as any organized sport. So I was like getting really stoked on this idea of using skiing and snowboarding and like outdoor recreation and things like that as like the mode of physical therapy. Instead of being in a clinic, you know, doing exercises on stairs or whatever, like we're out on the hill doing these activities through the lens of like physical therapy.
Yeah.
And I never thought that was going to happen. You know, I never thought that was going to be a thing that I'd be able to do, but it was like something that I kind of put out there. You know, I did my research on it and everything. I presented on WebEx in the pandemic. So shout out WebEx, RIP WebEx. So that was a really interesting way to like, here's the sum of my work, you know, in school, to a screen. But, you know, nonetheless, I wound up moving out to the Catskills, kind of unrelated to all of this. I had heard about ASF just from living here, but didn't know what was going on, and was working as a PT. And I was doing the thing, you know, I was an outpatient ortho down in the Hudson Valley, and was seeing a bunch of patients, and the pace was like a little bit much for me. And I wasn't feeling like I was able to, you know, I wasn't feeling like I was really doing what I wasn't having like the effects, I guess, that I wanted to be having, because it was just a super high pressure pace and things like that. I had heard that this position opened up. I kind of threw my hat in the ring, you know, not really having much experience in the ski industry other than the couple years that I taught adaptive snowboarding. So I didn't really think much was going to come of it, but you know, over the course of a few weeks, I started interviewing and going through the whole process and really gelled with the whole team. And, you know, I think they saw that I could bring like a unique perspective to this whole operation,
yeah.
You know? And, so I've been doing it since then. That was in, November, 2021. So I guess I'm going into my fifth season of the ski snowboard world.
And what a cool way to be able to compare, I would say, from like kind of the production, but more of the sterile environment of what medicine can be to the,
totally
like an overlapping of worlds, you know, yeah. For you.
Well, and one of the issues that I kind of saw in like our medical model, especially in the rehab world, is for the most part, you know, we have like three phases, right? There's, you know, the acute rehab. So it's like what happens immediately after an injury or a stroke or something like that. Then there's the subacute rehab, which is like you don't need medical attention all the time, but you can't go home yet. Mm. So you go into a nursing facility or whatever, or you go to the rehab floor of a hospital. And then you work, and eventually you go home. And then from there, you might have some outpatient therapy and things like that that gets you, like, better suited to, like, function in your house and go, you know, it might extend out into your work and into some of your community. But that's really, like, where the line starts to stop.
Mm.
And so, like, what is phase four, you
right.
know? And that is going out and doing cool things.
Yeah.
You know, that's empowering people to like get out of the house. And yeah, going out in the community is great. And it's like essential to our survival, but that's the bare minimum, you know? So in your community, now you can start participating in events. You can find, especially out here in the Catskills, endless outdoor recreation. And when you ask a bunch of people in this area, you know, like, how do you identify or like, what's your big thing? Typically the first thing they say is like, oh, I'm a skier. I'm a snowboarder. I'm a backpacker. I'm whatever.
Big time.
So you associate yourself with the thing that you do.
One of those activities.
So what we're trying to do at ASF is like bring that sense of identity and stuff to folks who like need the support in those things that can provide that identity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So going back, but before you applied for the position, you actually volunteered at ASF first?
No, that was at Arise and Ski out near
Syracuse. Okay. So that was, you kind of learned about the program out there what the program could
right,
be.
Right, which was like a much smaller operation, you know, totally a different way that it all goes down, but still kind of in the same lane.
Yeah.
And then it was like taking what I had had and multiplying it by a huge factor. And that's what, you know, ASF was.
The program up here is a very, very strong program. Can you run through what the program is at Wyndham, what the ASF program is? Like maybe start with the winter program
yeah.
and give an idea of who you're helping, who you're working with, who you're
totally.
Servicing. And
So at Adaptive Sports Foundation, our mission is to empower lives through adaptive sports. And adaptive sports is taking an activity that we do and modifying the activity in order to meet the support needs of a person who has a disability of some kind.
Yeah.
So what we're really getting at is changing the activity, not changing the person.
Mm.
So our big thing, our bread and butter, you know, what takes up a lot of our time and energy is our ski and snowboard program. So we operate like a regular ski school. We do lessons, skiing, snowboarding, and all kinds of different ways to adapt that, which can involve sitting. It can involve.
Yeah. I mean, for people who are unfamiliar with exactly what that entails, yeah, of meeting the individual where they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, run through some of the gear, because for a normal person who's right, gone skiing or gone snowboarding, you know the basics of the gear. But when you're adapting for an individual and meeting them where they are, like, run us through what right, some of that gear is.
Yeah, totally. So it would be helpful, I think, if we split into physical disability and cognitive disability.
Which I think that's amazing, because yeah, I think a lot of people think of it either one way or the other way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's amazing to describe,
yeah,
both.
Yeah, because we service both populations. And
absolutely,
then there is plenty of folks that are both populations.
Yeah, overlap. Yeah, for sure.
So the easiest things to imagine are in the physical disability world. And that's skiing sitting down for the most part. So there's a mono ski, which is someone sitting down on top of one ski. Trevor Kennison is a big name in that right now.
Yeah.
He's got a Netflix documentary called Full Circle, which is really good. Jay Raw is another one who's a really great mono skier right now. So those folks are skiing independently.
Yep.
You know, imagine like wheelchair skiing. Then there's bi-skiing, which is two skis and a person sitting down on top of that. Those folks are always tethered from behind, meaning an instructor has ropes that go to the bi-ski, and they're guided down. And the skier is going to steer and participate as much as they can. We have folks that are close to independent that, you know, are maybe working towards monoski. And then we have folks in bi-skis that can, you know, only really move their eyeballs and things like that, with different neurological disabilities and things like that. So you can have a relatively, you could use someone who needs relatively low support or someone who could need a whole lot of support.
Yeah.
In this
that's
equipment.
That's a big spread. That's a
totally.
Big, yeah. Of
yes,
who, of who
yeah,
you're
yeah,
working
yeah,
with. Yeah.
There's plenty of other crazy things. I'm sure we'll chat about it at some point, but in our movie We Are Athletes that is
yeah,
just out publicly now, those people are all using handheld outriggers, which is basically ski poles and crutches combined. So it's like forearm crutches that have little skis on the bottom of them, so you can, while you're skiing, you leave four tracks, so you're called a four tracker, and you're using these handheld things to give you support. You can also be a three tracker. Typically, you know, a lot of folks that have an amputation or whatever of a lower limb that wind up being three trackers, where they're using the outriggers and one ski.
And the same applies for them. They could be tethered or untethered as far as what assistance they
yeah,
need.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so that kind of bridges into the cognitive world and some of the physical world. But you know, there's plenty of different devices that we use where, you know, we'll sometimes put you in a climbing harness and can tether you from behind to help you, you know, start your turns to make sure you know, that you're not going to straight run down the hill and everything like that. So lots of folks that are nonverbal or that have a cognitive disability that needs a lot of support, they tend to be more kinesthetic learners. So you can talk until you're blue in the face about what to do.
Mm.
They might receive that information, but the integration of that task into movement is where they might have a challenge or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we find if we facilitate the skiing either with tethers or with different equipment that the instructors would hold on to and the student would hold on to, something that just facilitates them sliding on the snow so they get the sensory feedback.
Mm.
Eventually, you can start to wean them off of the equipment and they can possibly make turns and stuff on their own. Not everyone. Some folks totally move on really quick. Some yeah. folks are tethered for,
yeah,
for a long, long
skis
time.
For a long
you know?
Time. Yeah, or forever.
Right.
Yeah, I want to go back to even just to make sure that everybody understands for people who are maybe a little outside of the world is like, because the amount of volunteers that ASF works with is a massive number, the amount of people that spend their time up there every weekend, as well as the staff. And when it comes to working with people with disabilities, the tethering versus tethered versus untethered is there are volunteers that are working directly with the individuals. If you have somebody that is a full tethered, there's a volunteer that is controlling them from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the mountain. At least one person, right? If not multiple people. You know, one person in a bi-ski may go out with how many?
One person in a bi-ski is typically, if you have a smaller individual and a strong team of instructors, it's two.
Yes,
but most of the time it's 3 to 4 instructors, and so it's only going to be one on the ropes going down the hill.
Right,
but the rest of the team is there to lift onto the chairlift because these big bucket skis actually do go onto the chairlift. They go to the top of the mountain. So they need someone to do that. It's helpful to have someone who manages the gear because there's gear that goes on and off every time we get on a chairlift. There's yep. pins that need to be in the right place for the chairlift versus riding. And that mentally can be a lot for someone to do this huge physical task of tethering, you know, all the way down the mountain and then managing all the gear and all that. So
yeah, as you're getting on and off yeah. the lift as well.
And then, you know, on a busier day, the team will, you know, the bi-skier will go first and then the rest of the team will ski behind them to sort of take up a little bit of space and make sure that no one really what we're trying to avoid, obviously, is anyone hitting the bi-ski.
Yeah.
But occasionally in this world, folks will not notice the tethers and they'll try to ski in between the tetherer and the bucket.
Yeah.
And they'll clip themselves. So not really much, you know. Nothing.
It's more of a safety. It's a safety.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
We don't see, you know, we really don't see a big issue with it at Wyndham, which is awesome. Everyone tends to give us a lot of space, which is really cool. But definitely, you know, at other resorts, you might really need those blockers there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think just the point is accentuating how much, you know, real work goes into working with some individuals.
Yeah.
Right? It's again, we'll give the volunteers their shout out. But
yeah.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I mean, it's not just volunteering time. I mean, it's muscle. It's
totally.
Yeah. And committing to the bit.
Yeah. We have. So yeah, definitely shout out to the volunteers. There's 8 of us that are like full-time staff and there's just north of 200 volunteers.
Awesome.
The volunteers do everything from teaching the ski and the snowboard lessons and doing all that stuff, which we could talk for a long time about what goes into that.
Yeah,
the skill development that you need to build in order to be able to take some of these more complex lessons out and stuff. Like there's some folks who've been at this for so long and they're so dedicated. The skills they built are like so strong. It's really awesome. And they have done it all through like the goodness of their heart,
absolutely,
which is the coolest part.
Yep. So some of that other gear. So sorry, mm-hmm. I interrupted to come back to the tethering.
Yeah.
Because I wanted people to really visualize what's involved in the
totally
in I mean, you're the backside of it and the organization of it and everything, but then when the activity actually comes, like the work of the activity.
Right.
So you were talking monoski, bi-ski. 4 trackers, 3 trackers.
Yeah, so we basically split up the adaptive ski world into like these 6 modules, which is mono and bi,
mm-hmm.
3 and 4 track, and then cognitive and VI. VI is visual impairment.
Yes.
So there's not a whole lot of extra equipment that might go into a visual impairment lesson. What we use is like Bluetooth communication headsets for motorcycles.
Oh, whoa.
So we will put them into the into the ski helmet of the student and the instructor, and then they can communicate, you know, the instructor is either going first or they're going behind. It depends on their relationship, kind of. And the instructor's calling out the turns or whatever. That's on a more high-level lesson. When we're learning and things like that, we don't need those. You know, we're right there,
yeah,
close
right there.
By.
Yep.
And it might be more of a tactile thing, like, again, what, you know,
tethered or
a pole that they can hold on to facilitate the slide, or tethers or whatever it would take.
Gotcha.
You know, to teach that kind of lesson. And then in the cognitive world, it's just, it is, like we said earlier, meeting the student where they're at and using whatever you can find to bridge the gap. You know, so some of our equipment is like toys. Some of our equipment is, you know, things that are more tactile, more sensation that, you know, improve like the sensory feedback of a lesson. So our things range from they're all relatively simple, but the modality, or like, I guess the methodology that we're using is relatively sophisticated. Like, okay, they're holding onto this pole to ski, so that way, without verbal instruction, we can provide them with sensory feedback and get them to understand that they did just shift their weight because they followed me. I'm guiding the pole, and now they're seeing when their weight moves, you know, turns happen or whatever. To as simple as, if I hold this toy snowball that's not going to melt in front of me and ski backwards, they're going to look at that and come towards me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it really ranges, you know, how sophisticated or how simple kind of the approach needs to be. But and then there's plenty of folks that you know, have a cognitive disability that don't need any equipment, that don't need anything different than a one-on-one lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that maybe being in a crowd where they're not going to get that one-on-one time is just a little overstimulating or doesn't quite suit their learning style or whatever. So all of our lessons are one-on-one, or they're 2-to-1, or up to 3-to-4-to-1 if it is using big equipment, or if it's a student who just needs that, who needs, you know, we're going to set an instructor that's going to ski with the student and two instructors further down the hill that are going to basically act as cones.
Mm.
And they can talk to the student and give them cues and keep their attention and
yeah.
things like that. So, you know, there's plenty of different ways that we get people slide in, and it all just depends on who's putting on the boots, who's
yeah.
putting on the skis.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then talk summer gear, because you guys, so what are some of the summer programs?
Yep. So our summer is super scattered. It's a lot of fun. My big program is called Warriors in Motion. So that's all geared at veterans with disabilities. My colleague, Russ, we kind of share some of those responsibilities, but then he separately runs our skateboard program, which is really targeted at folks with cognitive disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a newer program to us. As we've started this and like have been dipping our toes into like the adaptive skateboard space, we're learning that we might be the only cognitive program. That
oh, wow.
There's a lot of para programs that are yes. teaching folks that have amputations or that, you know, have a physical disability, but there's not a lot of neurodivergent
yeah.
skateboarding programs or whatever, which is really what we focus on, which is super cool. And then we have like a multi-sport summer camp, which is you know, for a lot of the same students we see in the wintertime, folks with physical and cognitive disabilities. We throw a bunch of sports at the wall and see if anything sticks. We adjust the games and the activities as needed,
yeah,
based on attention or physical support or whatever. And then we keep rolling with skiing and snowboarding. We do 2 nights a month of ski and snowboard lessons at the American Dream Mall in East Rutherford, New Jersey. They have a place called Big Snow.
Shout out Big Snow.
So we go there.
Oh, that's amazing.
2 nights a month. And I schlep as much gear down as we need. And, you know, I make the drive down. And then if I have to come back up that night and switch gear out and go back down, I'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
And
shout out Big Snow. That's awesome.
It's Big Snow is an awesome learning space.
Yes.
For everyone that's there is learning. It's such a cool vibe. They have great beginner terrain. They have a really great terrain park. So they're, you know, the freestyle that you see there is so great.
Yep.
And it's a good place for us to do intro lessons. You know, it's 28 degrees all the time. There's 8 inches of snow all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't rain. There's no wind.
Yeah.
It's not.
There's hot chocolate at the bottom.
Right.
Yeah. There's, it's not. It's got everything dialed.
It's not 68 degrees and you're sweating and in slush, you know? So especially for folks with disabilities or whatever that have like an accessibility need, it can be a lot if you're in the tri-state area or if you're in the city to make the commitment to come up to Wyndham, to find lodging, to get the lesson, to figure out what to do with the rest of your family while the one person gets a lesson, you know, and then, to, you know, that driving and all that is, can be really difficult.
Yeah.
So Big Snow provides this awesome opportunity to like not travel too far and to not risk it on the weather in the Northeast, you know, and to learn how to ski and snowboard. And if you like it, you could do it 3 or 4 times there. And if you like it, then you branch out.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool thing for the industry and like growing the sport and everything. So yeah, shout out Big Snow one more time.
Yeah, shout out Big Snow. That's awesome. Yeah, and being able to walk through the mall with your snowboard gear, it's a little easier than schlepping through a blizzard or rain or whatever we've been getting for weather these days.
A couple of weeks ago at one point I had my snow pants and sandals on.
Yes, that's a combo.
Felt really cool.
Like something's off. One of these isn't working. Yeah. But
I felt like I was in the like create a character menu on a game.
Oh man, it is funny walking into Big Snow how many people are in the mall and see you walk by with a snowboard and gear and are like just blows their mind. What a cool connection. And to your point of a very controlled environment when you're working with the least controlled in a way, right? You're
totally.
Like you're adapting to everything.
Totally.
To every person, to the weather, to
TGR put out a really great like short doc last year called Mountains Not For Profit. And one of the guys in that was like, oh yeah, you're relying on the weather, heavy equipment, and lots of people, which are the three most unreliable things. And so if you can eliminate some of that unreliability or whatever, some of that variability, then that's good. If you can control some of that, that's great.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to ask you about your published works, but you already worked through that. But I think in the lead up to this, like learning about what your history was, I mean, what a awesome opportunity, what an awesome field for you to step into. And I think what an incredible benefit for them. I mean, for someone who's looking at it from such a critical, I wouldn't say critical, but you know, you've been in the world of physical therapy and working with people who you know, need that on a regular basis and being able to work that into your everyday, you know, everyday work up here is incredible. That's awesome.
Yeah, I hope that it has a good, you know, I always hope that it's a good impact. You know, it was definitely a little funny to leave the field that required this big degree that I had spent like most of my developed life, like, you know, getting at, and then to kind of take a lane change. You know, there was definitely a lot of like imposter syndrome, you know, a lot of like, what am I doing? Is this am I going to be actually able to bridge that gap?
Yeah.
You know, and I like to think that it's getting there. You know, I don't ever want to think what I'm doing is like perfect, because then you're going to like stop trying to get better. Right.
Yeah.
But I know based on some conversations that I've had with our participants and things like that, that what we're doing at ASF is different. And it's definitely not just me. You know, all of our volunteers, give off the same kind of energy. All of our staff is the same way. I mean, a subgroup of volunteers I didn't get to mention earlier is the kitchen staff.
Oh, so big shout out.
Huge shout out.
Yeah.
So we, for those that don't know, like Adaptive Sports Foundation, we have our own separate lodge that is slopeside on Wyndham Mountain. So we don't operate out of the Wyndham Mountain Club or anything like that. We're totally separate. We have our own adaptive lodge that's like ADA everything, which is awesome. And we have our own lunch program for our students. So that way, you know, we can all be together. We don't have to go through as much of a sensory overwhelming environment as like a crowded ski lodge. Mm. And it creates a cool place because when it's busy during lunchtime at ASF, you know, everyone's themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks, you know, a lot of families that have a person with a disability, you know, have to like do some kind of masking. And it's like all the masks are off during lunchtime at ASF. It's awesome. And it's because people are being fed really good food that's like cooked by real people. So like when we have Sunday sauce, it's, you know, shout out Tina Colella. It's Tina's sauce. You know, she's
incredible.
She's the ASF Nona and she, you know, she makes the sauce. Lori Kleiman is our kitchen kind of manager and she's a volunteer. So she's there Saturday, Sunday, all through the ski season. Cooking it up, you know, and managing the ordering and all that stuff. So, it's definitely not just what I bring to the table. I like to think that I'm part of this greater thing that is just doing it different. Yep. Like we're super personal. You know, we are like the biggest program in the Northeast. But we're not the biggest in the country. I would rather be the one that provides the like best experience, you know? So I'm totally fine if we operate, you know, in the Northeast. So we're, you know, and we're not going to access the same huge populations and things like that as other places. I'm happy with like sharing the wealth and letting other programs be huge and letting other programs put on 200 person events and things like that. Cause those are totally necessary and they're awesome.
Yeah.
And likewise, I'm happy that we're able to put on some more intimate events, that we're able to get to know our students really well because we have a lot of repeat folks, that we have volunteers that have been here for 40 years. ASF has been around for 41 years, and we have volunteers that have been doing it for 43 years before ASF had a name.
And it was
Ski Wyndham Adaptive Program and whatever. So, you know, shout out to all those people that were involved, you know, in the early years, you know, before we were even ASF, some of them are still around. So to, you know, to be in any career for 40 years is huge. To be in one volunteer role for 40 years is like
that's
ridiculous.
Incredible.
You know?
Yeah, that's incredible. And shout out to Wyndham, I mean, for continuing to, you know, support the program, for being a supportive member for so many years.
Totally. It is an awesome place to be able to ski out the back door into, you know, awesome terrain that varies from super beginner to like actually pretty difficult.
Yes.
and that has anything in between. You know, the parks are awesome, and you know, and adaptive lessons are not like excluded, you know, from the park or anything like that. Like we're on the whole mountain just like everyone else, maybe not with the big heavy equipment and stuff, but we have plenty of students that you know, are working on features, that are working on bumps, that are working on trees and things like that. Just like we have beginners and folks on the lower mountain and stuff too. So,
yeah. Well, really cool. I think the integration is back to your comment of, you know, you don't have a lot of negative interactions with the public, right? With like, as far as having people skiing aggressively or anything close to your lessons is like, adaptive is such an integrated part at Wyndham. You know, you see each other in the line, you see each other going down the trail. I mean, it's you see an adaptive jacket like you see a ski patrol jacket, or you see any other program on the mountain. It's at the same level and above. I mean, it's such an integrated part of the experience at Wyndham.
Yeah.
It's respected. It's respected, especially, you know, by the people who have been there for a long time, but.
And it's awesome, you know, if you are in a bi-ski lesson or something like that, and you're ripping down Whistler, and, you know, as folks are stopped, or there's a clinic going on, you know, and so 10 people are like, cheering you on, pumping their fists and stuff. You know, it's super supportive. And I definitely think that, like, from the student perspective, that's felt.
Yeah.
You know, which is awesome.
Could you talk, you did mention that documentary that you guys put
out.
Could you open up about that? Because I had the opportunity to watch that recently, and absolutely incredible.
Did you cry?
I was crying in the coffee shop, dude. I'm like, I'm like putting my head down. I'm like, you got to be kidding me right now. What was the young woman's name?
Farrell Fishman.
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, got me all caught up in
dude.
It. That she gives that little speech at the end, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, man. I'm in public.
Right. Like, right. Right.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie now like 32 times, and it got me the first.
What is the name of it? If people want to look it up.
So. So, 2 seasons ago, I guess, 2023 was the ski season. We made a short film documentary called We Are Athletes. And this was a project that kind of came out of nowhere. We had just hired a new development director, Olivia Ansis. She's awesome. She's a rock star. And she comes from, like, the film world.
Mm.
And she saw Kentucky Fried Wishes, which is a grant program that KFC puts on. So shout out KFC.
Shout out KFC.
Thank you, Colonel, for putting this together. So Kentucky Fried Wishes was, you know, they have a grant program to help nonprofits do some kind of dream program. And so Olivia was like, we have all these amazing stories to tell about our students. Let's make a film. And let's use this grant to do that. And so the grant was for X amount. And we pitched this idea to HUDSY. So that's HUDSY. HUDSY is a local filmmaking nonprofit out of Kingston. Angel Fonseca is he's the dude there. So shout out Angel. He's awesome. He's got a really cool team. Shout out Lex and Tosh who helped kind of make the movie. But they matched what we got for a grant. So we wound up with like a decent budget.
Oh wow.
To figure out, you know, what's a story that we want to tell. And it was funny kind of coming up with the idea of like, what are we going to do? Because you can point your finger at any
person.
You go walk into lunch
any person.
during lunchtime, like I said, and everyone's got an amazing story. There's so much really groundbreaking stuff happening. So we had a few folks in mind, and the two that really we wanted to showcase, was Farrell, who we mentioned, who's a 10-year-old. Was a 10-year-old at the time of making it. She was learning how to four track. So she was she has cerebral palsy. So she has lower leg strength impairments and some balance and things like that that she needs some physical support with. So she was learning how to four track. And then her counterpart was Matthew, our buddy Matt Garrett, who is a veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and super long laundry list of physical and cognitive disabilities that he's dealing with after getting injured over there. Matt came to us a few years ago for one of our big warrior learn to ski weekends, which we do every year. And he just had an awesome story, and he thought he was going to be bi skiing. He didn't really know what skiing was going to entail for him. He was an expert skier. He got injured and went a bunch of years without really skiing and stuff. So, was trying to figure out what getting back to skiing was going to look like. So he shows up with these huge fat powder skis from Colorado. And I was like, oh,
brother. Yeah.
So we gave him some outriggers. He started making awesome turns. We're like, keep them, because now you can ski.
Yep.
And so we have these two people. There's Farrell, who's a young kid learning how to do this, trying to like master it. And then there's Matt, who is coming back into it at a high level and rediscovering community and stuff in skiing.
Yeah.
And so what a cool juxtaposition.
Yeah.
And you know, we could have We could have done a bi skier and a mono skier. We could have done a mono skier and a person with autism or whatever. You know, we really could have done so many different stories. But these two in particular just speak so freely. And like, Farrell is in the movie 10 going on 38. She has more emotional maturity than myself and half the people I know.
Yeah.
And so the movie just kind of follows like a season in the life where Farrell is trying to break away from some more bulky equipment and learn how to four track and do it by herself without the tethers. It's all leading up to the end of the year. We always have this big race that all of our students participate in. So her big quest is like, can I go through the race course solo? And Matt's big quest is, can I feel something good by skiing? Because I've got a lot of stuff that I'm dealing with. And if I can just have a few days here and there to slide and, you know, experience that feeling that makes us ski or snowboard or hike or cycle or run or whatever, where it's like you let go.
Yeah.
And you get fully enveloped in the activity, you know, it's therapeutic.
Yeah.
And both of them just together, you know, their stories are so raw and so real, and they tell their stories so well. It was humbling, I guess, is a good word.
Humbling is the word.
To be a part of it.
Dude.
because it taught me a lot, one, about, you know, what it takes to put on a movie or a documentary. I definitely don't look at any reality TV or documentary things the same anymore because I can't get out of my head the like, okay, so we're going to go in the front door and we're going to get a shot of you coming in the door and you just say hello. And then, you know, now it's rolling.
Yeah.
But everything that we did in the film was unscripted, you know, so it was just, everything was from the heart. Everything that they said, everything that I said was, you know, really what we meant on one take. And, you know, learning more about both of their stories and learning about, you know, as we've toured this now, we went, I don't remember exactly how many, but we've shown it at a bunch of film festivals, from like Real Abilities to the Big Apple Film Festival, the Manhattan Film Festival, Santa Fe Film Festival. You know, it's we've shown it at a bunch of these places. So we've also spent a lot more time with Matt and Farrell outside of the lesson environment. So we've gotten closer with them. Definitely. And we've also seen what it takes to go to New York City for an afternoon to go to a film festival and back.
Yeah.
And it's given us, you know, myself and some of us, the staff and everything, just a little glimpse of like what the folks that we service, what their day to day is
every
like,
day,
you know?
Yeah.
And as we were scheduling the shoots and all that, it really like, you know, all I have to do is, for the most part, is schedule lessons, and Jenny helps me with that. Shout out, Jenny.
Yeah.
You know, she really does the bulk.
Yeah,
she does
legend.
The bulk of it,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
I just like put the final touches on it.
Yeah.
But even that, we see how we communicate so much, and we see what it's like to get someone, you know, from the city to up here who has significant, you know, support needs or whatever. So doing the movie definitely helped us see that by getting so close to everyone, for sure. But now it's available, it's online, it's on YouTube. If you type in We Are Athletes, it should be like the first thing that comes up. If you go to our website, which is adaptivesportsfoundation.org, I think it's on our homepage right now, along with a bunch of other information. That's also where you can go to request lessons and learn more about the program and everything like that too.
Yeah, and also the structure of Adaptive is it's a nonprofit. It's a 501c3.
Yeah.
So it runs off of donations and it runs off of fundraising.
100%. So yeah.
If, you know, and you know, 200 plus volunteers.
Right.
So it's it takes hands, you know, boots on the ground.
Totally.
You know, hands in the kitchen.
Totally.
And bucks in the bank.
Yeah.
So, you know, donate, volunteer, give back if you can.
All of our warrior programming, so that's everything that we do for veterans, is completely free of charge to veterans. All of our ski and snowboard lessons. We do have a rate for those, but much, much, much less than, you know, what you might see at other places, or certainly much less than if you were trying to do a, you know, a traditional you know, route for the lessons. So we generate some funds from actually selling the product, but not much compared
to the way to keep it affordable for everyone
is through massive fundraising efforts.
Absolutely. Tony, thanks for coming in. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is a lot of fun, yeah, for sure.
This is awesome. Just kind of give everybody a little more of a window into, you know, what it takes to run that place and how much of a positive effect that it has. I think, you know, with your background and for anybody dealing with some of these things, just being able to be in your body and being able to, this is for all of us, is taking time to be with ourselves and focus on some things, and, you know, let the, especially, Matt, you know, just an incredible story and his ability to reconnect, which led to, you know, some reconnection with family, and it starts with being comfortable with being in your body.
Yeah. Not too long ago, Matt and I climbed up Twin Mountain together, his first summit of a peak since getting injured 10 years ago.
Wow.
So he's crushing it right now. We've got some lofty goals, him and I. And, you know, we're always just trying to grow, and I think you said it really well, like, put people in their bodies, and we do everything from overnight hardcore backpacking, you know, suffer fest, to chill kayaking and stuff. So next week we've got veteran mountain biking. So if you're at Thatcher Park or if you're at Elm Ridge or whatever, you might see us. Then we're kayaking the week after that. So if you see us at Colgate Lake and at CD Lane or whatever, you know, we're out there. So if you're on the mountaintop and you see the bus or anything drive by and there's a group of renegades hooting and hollering behind it, then, you know, that's us. And so, you know, give a wave or whatever, you know, we're always stoked to see everyone in the community, you know, we're always stoked to show off.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, giving everybody the same opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. Getting everybody out there.
Totally.
Right. And that's the work.
Totally. You would be amazed what people can do if you just put the supports in place and you put the time and effort in. You would be amazed how many barriers are made up.
Yeah. Thanks again, Tony.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was really cool.
Evan, what's your parting words, Evan?
Go watch We Are Athletes on YouTube. It's impactful.
Yep.
It's worth it. Watch every second.
It's a rewatch, too. It's just incredible.
Keep watching it.
Yeah. It's 37 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like perfect. It's 1.5 episodes of The Bear. If they're short ones.
Yeah.
It's one decently long episode of The Bear. Two short episodes of The Bear.
Nah, ASF is one of the best in the country, hands down. One of the best in the country, and I can't believe it's in our backyard here at Wyndham, New York.
Yeah.
So shout out to everyone that works at ASF and volunteers. But yeah, go watch that documentary. It's worth it.
Awesome. Cheers.
This is the Here podcast from the Crispin's Wyndham House Studios, hosted by Jesse Novak, produced by Evan Gutcha. Thank you for listening.